and welcome to Tax Talks. I'm Sharon Ferris at CEREC, the Canadian Education and Research Institute for Counseling. Thanks for joining me for this series of discussions with authors of CEREC's new Career Development Practice in Canada textbook. We're happy to bring you insights from these thought leaders in the career development field in Canada. Today, we're speaking with Nancy Arthur. Nancy is a professor and associate dean for educational studies in counseling psychology at the University of Calgary. She began her education in a one-room schoolhouse in southern Ontario, and those early years sparked curiosity about diversity and social justice issues. Her current teaching and research interests focus on multicultural counseling, career development, and international transitions. Nancy co-authored the award-winning book, Culture-Infused Counseling, and she is also a registered psychologist who works with clients in private practice. Nancy delivers keynotes all over the world, and we are delighted that she will be keynoting at the Connexus 15 National Career Development Conference in January in Ottawa. Her chapter in the Career Development Practice in Canada textbook, co-authored with Sandra Collins at Athabasca University, looks at diversity and social justice as guiding concepts for career development practice. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning, Sharon.
So first, Nancy, I have to ask you about that one-room schoolhouse that I mentioned in your bio. How did that influence your work in career development?
Attending a one-room schoolhouse was like a microcosm of society, but keep in mind, Sharon, that that one-room schoolhouse was located in a rural area where there was a real sense of community and people coming together and rallying around the school. But I think it was only when I actually left that one-room schoolhouse that I was exposed to aspects of diversity that I have never seen before. So all of our early experiences influences our views of the world. So I go back to that location of the first place of my education, which was in that one-room schoolhouse.
So like you, Nancy, we would all bring with us our experiences, our traditions, our values to the work that we do, and certainly career practitioners are no exception. So how does one's cultural identity impact the way a practitioner sees a client?
I think for a long time, the focus of culture and cultural identity was only on the people we work with, in some ways othering them. So I've tried to pull this back and say we as career practitioners also have cultural identities. And the way that we've been socialized in this world, the ways that we've come to understand our worldviews, our values and beliefs are so important because those are the lenses through which we see our own behavior. They provide lenses in terms of our interaction with other people. And we take that into a professional role. Our personal ways of thinking don't just leave the door when we go into our offices. So it's really important for practitioners to think about how does one's cultural identity impact the way that we assess people's issues, think about the nature of interventions that might work, and to be really mindful that our view is just one view.
Now, we all know that Canada is one of the most diverse countries in the world, and I imagine career practitioners in Canada would consider themselves to be quite culturally sensitive. How easy, then, is it for practitioners to unintentionally fall into stereotypes that might color their work?
I can assure you that if we asked a group of career practitioners this question, are you culturally sensitive, that we would see a lot of heads nodding in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And if you asked me that question, I would say, yes, I'm very culturally sensitive. But sometimes, you know, when we ask that big global question, and if we go underneath and begin to think about what types of diversity, what kinds of things have we been exposed to, we find that our general attitudes don't always transcend well across populations. So I think it's very easy for people to not realize, and it's only when we kind of are faced with contrast or situations that are unexpected, when there's a lot of ambiguity in situations, that's where we will go back to some of our kind of core beliefs. So it's very important for career practitioners to think a lot about what does that mean, not only to be culturally sensitive, but to really move that from an attitude to what kinds of actions do you use to show that you can demonstrate that kinds of cultural sensitivity in your practice.
Now, you mentioned diversity across populations, and of course, diversity has so many different flavors to it. Clients might be Aboriginal, an immigrant of a different religion or sexual orientation, and have varying physical, intellectual, and emotional abilities, or come from a different socioeconomic status. How can career practitioners best become familiar with the cultural beliefs and practices of so many diverse populations?
I think this is an aspirational standard in practice. One of the areas of resistance sometimes that I hear in my professional education work is it is impossible to know everything about so many diverse populations. So what I've been trying to do is support practitioners with a framework that allows them to really listen and try to understand what is salient for the client in front. We can have general knowledge about all those singular aspects of cultural diversity, but it's really what matters, what's important to the client, and we need a framework for which we can really assess and value aspects of diversity that matter most to clients' lives.
A key point that you stress in the text is, despite the importance of understanding these different groups that comprise Canadian society, clients aren't defined by their group membership. You write in the book that practitioners always need to explore each client's unique worldview. So tell me a little bit more about this.
Identifying clients by a particular group is actually unreliable information. And so one of the, I think, dangers of diversity training is when we say, well, if a client is from group X, do that. So there can be a lot of intra-group variation. So we have to kind of have two lenses when we view our clients. One of my best teachers was Dr. Paul Pedersen, and he maintains that we need to have two lenses. One is some general background information. Really, it's our responsibility to try and understand the norms and practices of major groups in our communities and society. But at the same time, we always have to have a lens of viewing the individual. I will say, though, Sharon, even though the statement that group membership is not so reliable, unfortunately, in our Canadian society, people still tend to be positioned and defined according to the group membership. Mm-hmm. And that is the source of oftentimes a lot of stereotypes and unintentional oppression. So whether or not a person really identifies with a group, sometimes they are positioned in ways that can be either enhancing or quite negative.
Now, you also discuss in the book how the meaning of career and career development itself differs by culture, and that the very concept of career development has been criticized as elitist. Can you explain that?
I think there's different ways that people view the roles in their life, the place of work in their life, and our term career has had as some fundamental assumptions that people have choice about the roles they fill in their life. So I think it's very important, not only from a vocabulary base of what term we use, but to really get inside what terms and meaning that resonate most with our clients. I've been very influenced by the work of Mary Sue Richardson and David Bluestein on this issue. In examining who has the resources to pursue a career, in contrast, looking at who is working as a means of survival, or how are different types of work valued in our life, such as social work or caring for children or seniors. So it's very important to really get inside the terminology and meanings that our clients use, because there's quite a difference between someone who has a luxury of choices and someone who is really trying to find a way into employment as a way to really support fundamental needs in their lives.
So I'd like to get your opinion on the state of affairs in Canada right now. How accessible would you say are culturally relevant career development services or employment services, if we wanted to call them that? Are they broadly available, or have we moved towards more of a one-size-fits-all model?
I think we're doing both across Canada. I think there is more attention than ever about the importance of understanding the clientele around whose service needs we're trying to deliver. I think there's a long way to go. Unfortunately, when we have models that are based with a one-size-fits-all, sometimes the specific needs of clients are not served as well as they could. So generalist services tend to provide a foundation of services, but it's really important to look at what resources individuals and groups might need, as in terms of prevention and education, but also the kinds of responsive or remedial services that we offer in different areas of Canada.
And I imagine in some areas of Canada versus others, say in more remote or rural areas, that it would be challenging to access those additional services.
Well, that's true. And often in urban settings, there is more of a selection of services. So I see the field really moving in a direction to make use of technology and innovations that will open up access to people who formerly would not have had access to career development services.
So you write in the text, Nancy, that many of the theories and the models that we use today in career development reflect a Western worldview. So that would be a worldview around ideas like individualism, linearity, and even the assumption that work itself plays an important role in people's lives. So along with Sandra Collins, you've developed a cultural infused counseling model. How does that work?
Well, I think what we've tried to do most of all in the model is bring attention to the importance of reflective practice. Reflective practice at the level of practitioners thinking about their own personal cultural identity, reflection about the clients, groups, and individuals that practitioners work with to try and really understand what's important and about their cultural identity. How does culture come into play in building a very effective working alliance, in understanding clients' concerns, in designing important interventions? And we've also emphasized a very strong thread of social justice in our work, recognizing that many of individuals' career concerns are framed by the context and social and societal and organizational barriers that they face. So interventions often need to go beyond working with the individual to really address some of the sources of distress that people are experiencing in their lives. What we have designed in our culture-infused counseling model is a flexible framework where people can choose what kinds of interventions fit really well in terms of addressing clients' specific needs.
Now, when you've seen this model put into practice, how has the client-practitioner relationship changed?
I think it's changed in terms of practitioners recognizing that during their interactions with clients, they're creating something very unique together. And I think that practitioners are telling me that they're framing clients' issues in perhaps ways that they hadn't been thoughtful about in the past. They are more prepared and confident about inquiring with clients what aspects of culture, even directly or indirectly, listening to client stories in new ways. So what we've tried to do through the model is equip practitioners for their work in everyday practice with every client.
Now, you've also stated that recognizing diversity is not enough to be a competent career practitioner, that it's too passive. So how can career practitioners be truly active in embracing diversity within their work?
I think on multiple levels. For example, there's opportunities directly working with individual clients where the nature of narratives or conversations that might be introduced, opening doors for clients to talk about experience in really authentic ways, being willing to ask questions about their experience of systemic influences, so they can be more active in the types of conversations that they're willing to engage with clients. Keep in mind that some of our clients have not had great experiences in the past of truly revealing or being authentic about their presentation because it's been negative. So we have to provide a really safe base for people to do so. But beyond working individually, I think the role of career practitioners historically has been around education and prevention. We can do more to reach out to groups and members of our communities. At the same time, over time we begin to see patterns. We begin to see issues that affect larger numbers of people, and it's really important that career practitioners think about individually, but also through their agencies, programs, and services, how can they try to impact larger systemic issues? Ideally, we would like to have a place where we're not providing these kinds of remedial crisis service to our clients if we could only make a difference about some of the influences in their lives.
So that's so interesting. You see this natural link for career practitioners that leads them from embracing diversity to social justice. But I imagine some practitioners would really interpret their role as working with the individuals, not necessarily trying to impact larger systemic issues, whether that's racism or poverty or sexism, for example. So what responsibility do you think career development professionals have in advancing social justice?
Well, obviously, I'm a big advocate that the role of career practitioners is more than working with our individual clients. But I think it stems back to the types of training and professional education. If we prepare practitioners to work with individuals, that's where they're going to feel more comfortable in their roles. If we can try to engage in pre-service education and also professional education, that will not only introduce people to the concepts, but I think we need more examples of this work in practice so that career practitioners feel very comfortable in terms of how they frame their work, but they're also equipped with resources. Part of this actually really connects to mandates of agencies and what people are hired to do, what they're supported to do, and whether or not they have the freedom to engage in work that might take them beyond working with individuals.
You mentioned needing more examples. I wonder, is there a concrete example you can share of a career practitioner advancing social justice through their work?
Well, Dr. Collins and I have had the opportunity to collect some of those examples. And what's been really interesting for us is how practitioners have talked about working both within and outside of the boxes, where they have been willing to look at and work alongside as allies with their clients, primarily to seek resources. One of the concerns I have is that many practitioners are not given the space and time to truly meet the needs of their clients and feel very frustrated sometimes about only being able to serve such a small aspect of their clients' work. So what I have seen and heard career practitioners talking about is putting issues on the agenda for their staff meetings so that they are not just working on their own, talking to each other, deciding where their resources and actions might go. I have seen examples of career practitioners calling colleagues in the community, trying to advocate for programs and services. Career practitioners have spoken publicly about issues and concerns. They have lobbied for presentations at conferences, in educational institutions. They have worked very closely with academic areas. They have lobbied for additional funds for support services. And politically, they have tried to connect with policymakers to make sure that government officials are well aware of the issues that members of the community are facing and what resources would be important to support their career development needs. There are multiple levels. When career practitioners hear the word social justice, they think it has to be something really big. It can be, mm-hmm. but our daily conversations, the way that we engage our colleagues, the way that we talk about our work can really be languaged and promote change.
So you've just given some really interesting examples of proactive interventions that group practitioners can take in the social justice arena. But interestingly, in the book, you talk about the flip side, and that's that career development practitioners may inadvertently support the status quo by helping clients adapt to oppressive employment and social conditions. Why is that?
This is a really political area, I think. Dr. Collins and I have worked with a fundamental principle, and that is that the professional is political. We often work within mandates of agencies or funders that determine the scope of practice. I've always maintained that we need a variety of services, and I would not want it misunderstood that I'm anti-remedial services or working with clients who are in more difficult situations. But sometimes our work is supporting clients to cope with very difficult or aversive conditions in our life versus practitioners having the resources, time, and support from agencies or funders to really try to address some of the conditions that lead clients to have the types of career issues that they have.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy. I think we're going to definitely look forward to hearing much more about this during your keynote at Kinexus 15. And I think this was just a really fascinating exploration of diversity and social justice. You've challenged a lot of the assumptions that we have around culture, and you've invited practitioners to really imagine how their career development work can bring about social change. So you can learn more in Nancy's chapter in the new CEREC textbook, Career Development Practice in Canada. Find out how to get your copy at www.cerec.ca. And be sure to join us for upcoming text talks with other leading contributors to the textbook. I'm Sharon Ferris for CEREC. Thank you all for listening.